Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, the show is about to start in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
He'll be fine on the mountain.
It's time for Inside the Gamecocks, the show. Built by the Barnuminium Company, served by Chicken Cock Whiskey, and part of the Chief Sports Network.
Touchdown, Carolina! Touchdown, Ace Sanders!
Phil Mullinax, and Jamie Bradford.
All right, greetings and good morning. Welcome aboard and welcome home. Inside the Gamecocks, the show, live always from the Signorama Studios, the preferred sign partner of your South Carolina Gamecocks, Signorama.com, located in West Columbia. I think Mike just fell over. Nope, that was the camera.
Just the camera.
Located in West Columbia.
Gamecock, I haven't had my first drink yet. I'm good.
Gamecock operated. You never know. You're in Florida. Gamecock operated. Matt Vaughn. Thankfully, he and his team keep Williams-Brice Stadium, Colonial Life Arena, Founders Park, and everywhere in between on campus looking darn right snazzy. Signorama.com, served by Chicken Cock Bourbon and built by the Barndo Co., where your dream home can be built in four states, the Carolinas, in Georgia, or in Tennessee. And they build other things too, like clubhouses and in-law suites. Or if you got a big piece of property and unfortunately your in-laws are going to be moving closer to you, I said unfortunately, you put them in the back of the property, or if you live on the water, put them in the front, just get them away from you. They can do all that as well. If you head to the barndominiumco.com, Sherbert is back with a jersey that has his corrected name on it. The golden tones are here. And Mad Dog Mullinax and his mustache and that other little thing. He's here as well until 2 o'clock. John Whittle is going to jump in 14 minutes at 11:20. And I'm sure I'm glad he is. We missed him on Monday, of course, with the Big Spur golf tournament, but I want to make sure we give him a public well done pat on the back, pal. John did a great job managing that golf tournament on Monday. And also, pat on the back to Evan Stone, center fielder for South Carolina baseball. And as an intern for the Big Spur, he was an integral part in getting everything together. So Reggie Bush has his Heisman back, guys. And obviously, we'll talk plenty of South Carolina football today. I just put out on my Twitter page, George Rogers won the Heisman in 1980. Will South Carolina ever have another Heisman Trophy winner, kind of playing off of the news of the day here. So what do y'all think about that? He's got it back. Deserving?
I think so. I don't like it. I mean, you can't strip championships. You can't take away wins. You can't take away awards, in my opinion.
Agreed.
I mean, it's just stupid. Give us our trophy back. All right, well, whatever. And
By the way,
I guarantee he's not the only Heisman winner to get paid. Did Eric Dickerson win the Heisman?
No.
He did not.
But he got paid.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, come on now.
He got paid by schools that didn't even get his services. Texas A&M never got anything for that Trans Am they gave him. A true story. He talks about it openly. Eric's not afraid to tell you how much money he was offered and given by a number of Texas schools back in the day.
I don't think that's the last time that's happened to the Aggies through the years, even recently,
yeah.
Mike.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. They don't care. They just get a guy named Big Red or Tex to pass his 10-gallon hat around.
JC,
time to get rid of Jimbo Fisher.
How many stars would George Rogers have had coming out of high school? Like, was he... Like, I know Ellis was a huge recruit.
Ellis was number one by some.
Right. Right.
Like,
back what then was George? Weird. Do you know?
No. I mean, that was like the only, I think maybe Tom Lemming wasn't even in the business at that point.
I know that.
Class of 76.
All right, to help this conversation, let me ask you this question. How would the grades have been different back then? Because running back was the premium position in college football. Uh-huh. It was even overvalued beyond quarterback.
You would have ranked them the stud running backs. There'd have been four, and then your top 15 would have been running backs every year. George Rogers, somebody would have probably overthought it because he was so big and moved him to fullback because teams did use fullbacks. And in fact, George in his freshman year played fullback at Carolina. And then they moved him back to tailback, and the rest is history. So
I didn't know that. So he was looking for somebody?
But keep in mind back then, too, you had 100-something scholarships. So, like, yeah, Georgia wanted him, but would he have started over Herschel? No. Right. I mean, there's so many – they could have used a transfer portal back then because there were so many talented guys that, like, big-time programs would take. They'd be third string their whole career, and they just take them. So Bear Bryant would take them and sometimes put them on a track scholarship, so Auburn didn't get them. And they just sit there and be on the team. You know, it was so different back then. Rosters were huge, and there were fullbacks. And so I don't know. My opinion is they would have overthought George a little bit.
Would Herschel have ever signed with Georgia if George was there? Because George Rogers got to South Carolina in 77. Herschel didn't get to Georgia until 1980.
That's, you know, Clemson may end up with, because wasn't Clemson number two for Herschel?
I don't know.
I think Clemson won.
I remember watching the doc on Herschel. I think you're right, JC. I mean, it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to Georgia. Yeah. He's a Georgia kid. Vince Dooley was on him like white on rice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. And back then, and I have to remind myself at times, because I still feel like a kid, honestly. But we're all at an age now, Jamie, you're a little younger, where we have to remind, there are people that listen to this show every day that are in their 20s, and they think that offenses always looked like this in college football. When I was growing up, and again, I have family that went to Auburn, I grew up Bo Jackson was my first idol, okay? And my brother was there to the tail end. Much even brother's older than me, but he's what kind of turned me on to Auburn and Bo. And back then, of course, you didn't have every game on TV. You had a few you could choose from on a Saturday, and that was it. But every SEC offense was conservative. There was no pass happy offense. They all ran the same boring. We didn't know it was boring back then because it's all we knew. But it was the same boring option, wishbone, wing tee. Wide receivers very often were split ends. Like, you had wideouts that had a hand in the dirt because their primary function on most plays was to block and not run a route. And what tailback you got was everything, whether it was George, Herschel, Bo. One of the best 30 for 30s, for those that haven't seen it, the best that never was, you know, I'm talking about, guys, the best that never was. He went to Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. He was from Mississippi.
Mississippi kid.
What was his last name?
Yeah.
Marcus Dupree.
Yeah. So Marcus Dupree was supposed to be as good as any of those guys, if not better. And Marcus wound up going to Oklahoma, got in the doghouse quickly, got homesick, was going to transfer. There was talk about him going to Southern Miss. Like how much money they get in the coffers and the Hattiesburg cushions to make that move go. He had a handler who was a crooked, your typical stereotypical guy who was trying to act like he cared about the kid, but he was all about getting paid. And then Marcus eventually went to the USFL, and then he played some for the Rams. In fact, mm-hmm. I think if you watch some of the footage of him in the NFL, you'll see Corey Miller making a tackle on Dupree.
Really?
These are the things, again, I need therapy. I'm the same guy who's going to watch every pick of the NFL draft. If it's full, I can't get enough of it. So I watch this, and I've seen it multiple times. But I swear, I'm like, that's 57 of the Giants. That's Corey Miller. But anyway, he, you know, back then, if you were a top-notch running back, that was more valuable than a quarterback.
Yeah.
Because all these offenses were all not just run first, they were run heavy. And so it's changed so much now. I mean, we're going to have another NFL draft where not a single running back goes in the first round. And that's right. No longer uncommon. And we're going to have six quarterbacks go in the first round. Just throwing out a number. Some people would say it's lower. I think it's going to be six. So it's completely changed the way we play. But I know I'm talking all over the place here. I'll just say, before Spurrier, every offense you watched in the SEC and most of college football, with the exception of Lavelle Edwards at BYU and some other teams out west, ran a run-heavy offense. And like the passing game was just something you had to do, but it wasn't a huge part of what you did in order to be successful.
Well, Reggie Bush encompassed all of that, and he was – so he – when you talk about Reggie Bush, now that he's getting his Heisman Trophy back, as a Heisman Trophy winner, as a running back, you have to put a little asterisk next to his name, and it's not because of the cheating stuff, not because he took money. It's because, like, if you said you need a pure running back, purebred running back, pick any running back all time to take it 40 times a game, you're not picking Reggie Bush. Like you're picking Herschel Walker, you're picking George mm-hmm. Rogers, you're picking Eric Dorsett, you're picking, I mean, you name it, right? You know, we can keep going here. The guys who historically would carry it 40 times. I'll tell you a name that I feel like always gets lost. Like if I said, just give me the quick answer. Best running back all time, JC. Who is it? And these are all opinions, of course, so it doesn't matter whether you're right or nobody's right or wrong. Who do you think is the best running back of all time in college? In college? Yeah.
I'd have to say Herschel or Bo or Barry Sanders.
Okay. Mike?
Herschel.
Bo or Barry Sanders would probably come up too, right? Herschel?
Yeah, Bo Sanders was the first one that came to mind.
Bo Sanders, that would be one hell of a player.
Not Bo, right. Bo Jackson, Bo Sanders. Yeah, sorry. A little distracted.
Okay.
It's been a long morning already.
If I asked look, Barry Sanders, Eric Dickerson, Bo Jackson, Earl Campbell. You know what name never comes up? And I look back, and if you remember, especially his last 2 years, it's impossible to leave him out. Ricky Williams at Texas. Ricky Williams ran, guys, for 4,000 yards in his final two seasons.
That's with a solid Longhorns 30 and for
53 touchdowns. 53 touchdowns.
Run, Ricky, run is a solid.
Very solid.
Very solid.
But his name never comes up when you ask somebody.
Because he went to South America. He quit football, went to South America, and smoked pot for 2 years.
That's the thing. The only thing he loved more than breaking tackles was smoking weed.
I want to love you. And treat you right.
Some guys can balance those two. Ricky went a little heavy on the pot run toting scale. Sure. Tilted a little too much on the pot.
You're absolutely right, though, JB.
Ricky's big into astrology now, of all things.
But there's other people. If I ask 100 people, you're going to get a handful that say the best running back they ever saw in college was O.J. Simpson. He killed his wife. I mean, like. But his name still always comes up.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
You know,
O.J. was before all of our time, but there's no question. He was a freak
Good Lord,
he was a you just watch some of the highlights. And, of course, I mean, you can go all the way back to Jim Brown. And, I mean, Walter Payton, as a kid, I didn't think there was a better person to ever run the football than Walter Payton. And, and oh, by the way, he could catch and he could block. He even threw some touchdown passes with the Bears. Now, I didn't see him at Jackson State, but I never saw a better running back in the history of the sport than Walter Payton. But if we're just going college.
No, just in college,
Herschel, you got to remember. Even a guy like Ricky Williams, like they did throw the ball at Texas. Ricky was obviously the focal point. But Georgia won a national championship. One of my favorite college football stats of all time. Georgia won a national championship in 1980. Their starting quarterback, JC's favorite sports talk show host in Atlanta, Buck Ballou, completed one pass. Let me repeat that. Buck Ballou completed one pass in the national championship game, and Georgia won a national championship. The point being, everybody in the stadium knew on every play, 34 in red was getting the ball, and they could not stop him. The combination of speed and strength, and I know it's the USFL, but USFL had guys like Reggie White on defense. Like USFL was not the UFL. USFL was a legitimate competition for the NFL. And Herschel broke Dickerson's record, OJ's record, 2,000 something yards with the New Jersey Generals. Doug Flutie was his quarterback. I don't think there's been a better guy to do it in college than Herschel. But you're right. Ricky Williams was fantastic. Reggie Bush, again, speaking to the 27-year-old Gamecock fan that's watching right now, Reggie Bush was phenomenal. Oh. He was absolutely electric. I don't know why he wasn't a better pro. I know he got injured a lot. I know he was busy dating Kardashians. That'll usually take a couple of yards per carry off your score sheet. But he was the last, 30 years in terms of dynamic. Was there anybody more dynamic?
No.
Than Reggie Bush? He was the best I saw since Barry Sanders at Oklahoma State.
Bingo. 100% agree. I would say that there was, and we got to get to break so we can get John in here. The only other running back that I can remember, but just from that era, but did not have what he had, the joystick aspect, was LaDainian Tomlinson. But
LT.
But he didn't have the joystick, whatever you want to call it. So, factors. There you go.
I remember as a kid getting ready for my mom to take me to school. Those were always fun days. You got a crush on a girl, and she sees you rolling up in the minivan, and sliding out with your backpack on.
Station wagon, white smoke, by the way. Anyway,
but again, this is the late '80s. We didn't have a lot of college football games on TV. So I remember my parents would watch the Today Show, and they would actually, and I'd be like, I don't want to watch Willard Scott give the weather or Bryant Gumbel do anything. But I remember there'd always be like this on Monday. They'd do a little recap of the news and sport. And I would watch just to see some Barry Sanders highlights.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you would get that when they were watching the Today Show. But, oh, by the way, this is what Barry did again. Here he is rushing for 247 yards against Kansas State, and the shiftiness and the elusiveness that I've never seen before, since, during, never. Barry used to go into slam dunk contests on the campus of FAU at 5'8" and do two-hand reverse 360 slams. Like, he was a ridiculous, ridiculous athlete.
So is John Whittle, and he is waiting and very patiently. Great athlete. Everybody hang tight. He'll join us when we return here on Inside the Gamecocks, the show.
I said, oh, Lord Jesus, it's a fire. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Disaster comes uninformed. During and after natural disasters or accidents, there can be a heavy loss to property. Having your home or office destroyed or damaged by water, fire, smoke, or mold affects your personal and business lifestyle. Resto Pros of the Midlands is here to help. Open 24/7. Call them when you need them. 803-493-0170. Resto Pros of the Midlands. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Quality that is guaranteed.
Down here in the South.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We don't always see eye to eye. While our taste in college football teams, or what sauce, if any, goes best on a rack of ribs, or what to mix with our Dixie vodka might be up for debate, we can all agree there's nothing better than a Southern tailgate. And like our favorite college teams, our ingredients come from small towns and big cities. They're grown in Southern soil, are crafted by Southern hands, and proudly represent the South in our backyard and beyond. So raise a glass of Dixie Southern Vodka to celebrate being made in America and raised in the South.
Welcome home. That's what the Gamecocks say, and so does the Barndo Company, where they can build your dream home starting as low as $160 per square foot. If you live in the Carolinas, Georgia, or Tennessee, their turnkey process takes just 4 to 6 months on average and can be custom designed by size and details. Make your dream a reality. Visit thebarndominiumco.com. That's thebarndominiumco.com. The Barn Dough Company. Gamecock. Owned and operated.
When you're a developmental program, which all Group of Five schools are, and you lose a great player, that's going to hit you much harder with that next guy plugging in because he's not there yet. He may be there. He's just not there right now.
I just recently reported about, the heart issue that, ultimately let a Big Ten stop. And originally decided not to play football. And we had reported out that story, kind of unearthing that it was because of the heart issue, potentially with
is that myocarditis?
Myocarditis.
I still had 10 scholarship offers because Chase would go play baseball and I would get a lion's share of the reps in the spring and they're like, who's this number 17? He's pretty good.
Listen to these interviews and more on the JC and Morgan podcast by downloading the Chief Sports app. Part of the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome back. It's 11:25. Resto Pros of the Midlands presents our coverage of South Carolina baseball right here on Inside the Gamecocks, the show, part of the Chief Sports Network. Make sure you have downloaded the app, the Chief Sports app. Resto Pros, also the presenting partner of the Big Spur Golf Tournament that was played on a brisk and cool Monday morning out at Fort Jackson, but it did warm up. As did our golf game. Unfortunately, John changed the rules and made sure that we finished third, so it didn't look like the thing was rigged. At least that's what I was told behind the scenes, John. Did you hose us, John? Is that what happened? You hosed us?
I didn't. If you would have read any of the rules beforehand, then it sounds like y'all might have won. Apparently, you didn't read the rules on how to use the string. Apparently, you didn't read the rules on the tiebreaker. Nope. So it sounds like there's one person at fault in all of this, and that is the guy with Founders Park in his background over there.
Nah, I'm going to blame that on DeMarco. I don't read very well. He's the smartest guy that I played with. He should have read the rules, and he didn't. So I'm going to pass the blame over to him. Although I had some folks on the Big Spur giving me a bunch of junk because they didn't believe us that we shot a 51. What I wanted to respond with was, Well, you must not seen him drive the green or drive 10 yards shy of the green on the 18th and then chip it up and actually into the cup for like our fifth eagle of the day. That's what happens when you can play golf, and he could. So we just got to ride in the cart the whole time and watch Pat play. But that's all right. I'll blame it on him, and I won't blame it on you publicly, but behind the scenes, I'll blame it on you. Like when anybody asked me, we got hosed. So,
well, I love it how you set all this up as, oh, we're going to congratulate Whittle on all the good he did, you know, hosting his golf tournament. And the first thing out of your mouth is excoriating him for you not reading the rules.
Yeah.
A successful golf tournament is one that has enough beer and good food. And we had both of those things. So
you nailed that.
You know, indeed. It was fun.
Hey, I got through one of my tubs of pimento cheese yesterday, Chris. If Chris is in here. My Nana Sports pimento cheese, he gave me two tubs. I got through one of them yesterday, so I'm saving the other for, I think, baseball on the porch on Friday night, as long as JC doesn't show up and eat it all before I get to it like he did last time. Who's he talking to? Is he talking to us? Are you talking to us, JC? You're looking at somebody else.
Yeah, I had my mic muted. I'm trying to get the thumbnail done for the show today because I had carpool and I had to take my wife to work. And I've been up like running around and traffic was bad. So, but I was trying to get that done. But no, I talked to Chris a little while ago, so I don't think he's in the chat box right now. I think he was running for to a meeting or something. But certainly,
Marion hit the nail on the head here. We'll just blame Coach Tanner. He gets blamed for everything else.
We knew it.
Just blame Coach Tanner, John. I'll send him a text here in a minute, let him know he really screwed the rules up for this golf tournament. But at the same time, I do mean it wholeheartedly. It was you that did all this. You put it all together. You ran a hell of a tournament. Thanks. Thank you for a fantastic Monday.
Absolutely. We had a blast out there, and thank you. And I guess we had about 70 folks come out there and play and bunch of volunteers, bunch of great sponsors, of course, led by Jeff Sturgis and Resto Pros of the Midlands. So, great time and look forward to doing it again next year for sure.
All right, John, great having you. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll catch up sometime. let's slide into some Carolina baseball with you here. We'll come back to the spring game just a little bit. We've done nothing but spring game the last day and a half. Do you anticipate the rotation remaining the same with Kentucky coming to town?
God, what was the rotation last weekend? It changes every week, right?
Roman.
Yeah. Eli, yeah. Esquire. Yeah. I think that's probably the way they'll end up going. It wouldn't surprise me a bit if they still leave Sunday as a TBA and just see kind of how things go. But, you know, Kingston was very, very pleased following the weekend with how those guys each gave their start. You know, we'll obviously have to check in on Roman tomorrow and be sure whatever issue was going on with his thumb is no longer there. But you know, Eli's going to be in there. You know, that is good as some of those guys were this past weekend. You know, not getting Roman to go a little bit deeper into the game, I think threw things off a little bit for the rest of the weekend. But I thought the pitching staff pretty much held up about as well as they could.
Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, Monday, what day was it? No, that was Friday. Yeah, Friday night. Same story, different weekend. Can't get the big hit. Of course, you've also got maybe the best pitcher in the country on the mound. I think the most interesting move of the weekend was Brenling being in the lineup, John. And he really had a nice weekend, be honest with you. I mean, he had a couple of nice little pokes, some nice ABs. Your thoughts on him if he stays there?
I don't know what to think about this, to be honest with you. I've never heard of this before. Mike, if you're listening, maybe you've heard of something like this before. But Austin Brenling has not been on the active SEC roster all year. Maybe there was one weekend, maybe there was two where we didn't realize it. He certainly never played. He hadn't traveled to any SEC away games and didn't travel to Florida the weekend prior to Arkansas. And then, you know, he comes in and gets not even onto the active roster, but into the lineup, batting nine hole, and then the next day he's hitting leadoff. to go from being off of the active roster, not because of injury or anything else, but to go from being off the active roster to hitting leadoff against the number two team in the country, it's pretty insane. And then for him to perform as well as he did offensively is really impressive. He'd only had two plate appearances all year, got hit by a pitch and was out on the other time. I mean, to go 40 games and not have but two live at bats in a game and to step back on the horse and do as well as you did against the best pitching staff ERA wise in the country. Pretty impressive.
John, the only name that even comes to mind, and it's not the same situation, like you said, that is extremely unique. I'll throw a name at you, Steven Reinhold.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. For a while, he was just buried on the bench. Like, I didn't even know he had a jersey. And then because of injuries, what have you, he started playing a lot and even got some starts. And I was like, okay, I guess I better study up on this guy because I didn't think he'd see the field. But he was just this guy that was barely hanging around. So sometimes a guy's thrust into duty like that. But if you're talking about a guy who's not even on the active roster, mm-hmm. and then he's in the starting lineup, that is beyond unique.
Well, and also he did have a nice weekend. I want to make sure we give him credit. And by the way, if anybody happens to run into Steven Reinhold, give him a big bear hug for Mike and myself, because he's one of the nicest, coolest dudes out there.
Awesome, yeah.
Okay, so much like Dalton Reeves, so people got really excited about Dalton Reeves. See, John, one of the things that it's hard to understand this with baseball as opposed to in basketball, where you can get on the floor and you can create shots, and you know, in football you can you go run routes, or you get the football and you run the football, and the quarterback, the ball's in your hand, you get to control where it's going. In baseball, once that scouting report's out, especially in this league, you start getting pitched differently. And nobody had seen Dalton Reeves. And then Dalton Reeves last weekend got a little bit of dose of reality now that he's on tape. And there's charts. You could see the charts back behind Coach Van Horn up on the wall. There was Dalton Reeves. Hot, cold, 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 cold. You know, so it was like, okay, well, we have the best staff in the country. We'll throw it to those parts and he won't hit. They did the same thing to Ethan Petrie. You know, now Austin Brindley, he had a nice weekend, but there's going to be tape out there, and here comes the second best ERA in the SEC. So these guys who flash is great. I love to see them flash. Everybody does. But when the other guy starts making the adjustments, you got to make your own here on this end, and that's still TBD.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. I mean, it's a very fair point. And, you know, we'll see whether in time, whether, you know, Dalton is a really good hitter or if it's because of the scouting report is out on him. But, you know, he does have and I know Mark Kingston talked about this publicly, but he does have a pretty smooth, pretty simple swing to where, you know, I think that he can make contact and, you know, not strike out and get a few hits. So I think he'll eventually be okay. But, you know, It's hard to judge him particularly harshly after facing Arkansas as well. So, you know, Hagen Smith, I mean, he's given up four hits all season to left-handed hitters. I mean, those guys, like, didn't really hardly have a chance on Friday night. And it's not like they're throwing a bunch of scrubs out there on Saturday in that doubleheader either. So we'll see how Dalton bounces back and see what Austin can do. Like the reason they put Austin in the lineup was because, you know, he's a different profile as most of the other guys on that roster. You know, he's a guy who's going to put the ball in play and doesn't strike out much. And you know, that's what he did. I think he had one strikeout on the weekend maybe, but you know, he did exactly what you kind of think that he's going to do when he's going right. So we'll see what he's got this weekend against Kentucky.
All right. Speaking of the Wildcats, they are really good. And I know that they got beat twice this past weekend by Tennessee, but newsflash, Tennessee's really good too. The Wildcats have a .296 collective team average. I think Mike said it best yesterterday on our program that they were kind of brought back down to earth a little bit. But they're still incredibly talented. And to be honest, John, their style of play offensively, and I think they're hitting 320 in the league. Yeah, 18 games in the league. They're leading the league in batting average, hitting 320 on the season. 125 strikeouts and 612 at bats. That's pretty good. That scares me. That scares me for South Carolina. I'm not saying the Gamecocks can't go win the series. They absolutely can, of course. But Kentucky offensively and their style of play, how they put the ball in play and kind of pepper it around versus a team with – I'm not so sure South Carolina has an elite ace. I think Eli's your ace, but is he elite? And are there other guys elite? I'm not so sure. They're throwing a lot of strikes. I think it's a – I'm not so sure it's a very good matchup.
Well, you talk about how they like to put the ball in play and run and steal some bases, and that's exactly what they do. But you also look at what they've done in SEC play, and you know they're second in the league in slugging percentage. They're third in the league in home runs. They're tied for second in the league in doubles. Yeah. I mean, so they're doing it. They're doing it in a lot of different ways. But you're exactly right, and that's what Kentucky's brand of baseball is offensively. And you know, it'll be curious for me to see how Cole Messina does behind the plate this weekend in terms of managing the run game. You know, there have been times, and I think a lot of this has to do with you know, a couple of the pitchers, but Florida especially, but Arkansas a little bit, we're trying to run on Cole a little bit more than I expected. So you know, Kentucky tries to steal bases more so than these other teams, and these other teams have been trying to push it on Cole a little bit here lately. So I'm sure Kentucky is going to try to do the same thing. You know, it's going to be a real challenge for this pitching staff to hold base runners maybe a little bit better than they have. And those have been mainly relievers who have had a little bit more difficult time holding runners. But that's going to be a big deal this weekend, I feel like, because, you know, Cole's still got that little bit of a thumb issue that he's had really dating back to the end of last season. And it's flared up on him a little bit here lately. And, you know, I think that's probably a big deal for him.
Yeah, I think so. Kentucky, 32 of 47 in league play on the base pass. I mean, the next closest team that's even at – nobody's even attempted close to that many. A&M and Vanderbilt have both attempted 26. Kentucky, 47. Kentucky's stolen more than the next team's even attempted.
Can I just interject on that?
Yeah,
I've known Mingione quite well. It is an understanding when you're the head coach of Kentucky baseball, you're not going to get the talent of, say, a South Carolina. You're not going to get a lineup that's going to compete with some of the greater ones in the league. You have to be a little more creative. It's almost doing Rod Delmonico 2.0 the way Tennessee, when they were really good the first time before they went into the doldrums for like 15 years. So you move runners, you play some small ball, you do things outside the box, because recruiting Kentucky is one of the more difficult jobs in the league. So they are trying to be more creative. They're never going to have a season where they have the most prospects in this conference. So you have to do things differently. And I think it's great for the game. I think there's way too much just a bunch of guys going for launch angle and swinging for the fences, guys who throw hard, guys who swing hard, guys who throw hard, guys who swing hard. Kentucky's saying we're going to flip the script and we're going to try to do things differently. So they're kind of a throwback in that way, and it can be frustrating to play them because they're unlike most of what you see throughout the year in conference play.
And to add to that, Mike, it's a great point. They've got a combined 20 sack flies and sack bunts, which is the most in the league as well. So the most stolen bases, most stolen base attempts, best batting average, would John say the third most home runs, the most sack bunts / sack flies. I mean, it's an impressive group. And if this is a ballpark that can play well to that, and if the wind's blowing out, it can really hurt you. So Carolina's going to have to miss barrels this weekend. I don't know how many they're going to miss for a team that doesn't strike out much, but they're going to have to find a way to miss some. And and we'll see what happens. 7 o'clock on Friday night, and Roman Kimball, who, by the way, threw great last Friday night. He threw very well. We'll see if he can maintain that against the best offense in the league. All right.
Another point on that is South Carolina's going to have a new shortstop out there this weekend. You know, Will Tippett has been very solid defensively. I mean, think what you want about his bat, but he's been very, very good defensively. And Lee Ellis will be out there this weekend, you know, at that shortstop position. Will has his hurt his knee after being hit by that pitch in the head on last Friday. You don't see that very often, but the way he kind of collapsed going down after being hit in the head with that 97-mile-an-hour fastball, he's got some ligament damage to his MCL, and he's going to be out probably at least a couple of weeks. It may be postseason play when he's back. So, you know, that's a big deal because Lee Ellis has five starts. He's got four errors. That's not great right there. So gonna have to be really good against a team that puts a lot of pressure on the defense.
Well, and Will was getting going. I mean, he was having his best run of the year offensively before that happened. So for all the Will Tippett haters out there, here you go. You got what you were hoping for. He won't be playing shortstop for a while. So hope you're satisfied. John, to kind of turn the page to South Carolina. So they won 17-0 at Williams-Brice Stadium on Saturday. Big win to start the season. 1-0 here. What'd you take? No, I'm just kidding. We'll start with the obvious.
Jeremy, I don't think you need to ask me anything football related because I haven't watched the spring game yet. I mean, seriously, like I've got nothing to add football wise. Like if it's time to start talking football, I'll see you guys later.
I've got nothing for you.
No,
says
John, we can talk a little hoops, know that. A little
that's where I was going. I was going to the hoops. Don't worry.
Okay.
let's talk about what's this guy's name? Jamil Brickus.
Yeah, that's
what is that how you pronounce it from LaSalle? I was told he was Philly tough. They like him.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on that and kind of what they're doing in the portal here. It looks like it's kind of down to two spots, right?
Yeah, down to two spots. You need a guard, need a big. You know, Nick Pringle is the guy that they're focused on from a big man standpoint, and they do feel I don't want to say it's a slam dunk on him, but they feel pretty good going into his recruiting process. I'm pretty sure that he will be on campus this weekend. I do expect him to take a couple of trips, so I don't think it's going to be a one and done trip for Nick Pringle. But yeah, there's the guard spot's a little bit open. They've been recruiting Dakota Lefeu out of Mount St. Mary's, but I don't think he's going to end up being the guy they're focused on right now. Jameer Brick is from LaSalle, who has shot well, was a third team all conference performer this past year. Got a little bit of speed and quickness to him. Can get to the hole a little bit. Shoots at a high rate from two and from three. Has a little bit more point guard in him than Lefeu does. I mean, I wouldn't call him a true pass first Talon Cooper type point guard who's going to be near the top of the country in assists. But he's got more point guard than shooting guard in him, I feel like.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So that he's when is he coming in, John? Coming in,
believe he'll be in. I know he's in today. I can't remember if he got in yesterday or if he's coming in today. But he's got a 2-day visit. He starts today. 2-day visit starting today. He'll be on campus until tomorrow.
And if he decides to shut it down and commit to the Gamecocks, and they're done at the guard position, then the next target is the Pringle kid from Alabama. I'm assuming still their top target there, right?
Correct. Yeah. It's 100% top target on Pringle. And if somehow they miss on him, they're going to have to go find another big. But, you know, those are the top two guys on the board right now.
All right. So if you you saw both these guys play, you know, Jordan Butler and Pringle. If you add them to this team, replacing the departed now Josh Gray, replacing BJ Mack, early impressions of what that would mean for this roster?
Well, Butler is not a Josh Gray replacement. You would view him more as a BJ Mack replacement. Butler's a guy who likes to who can shoot the three ball. So he'll be all over the court a little bit like Mack was from an offensive standpoint. Now he's not going to be a guy who bangs around particularly well in there, but he'll block some shots. He's athletic. I think this is a much better fit for him here than at Missouri, where Mike can comment on their style of play a lot better than I can, but they're a lot of pressing, a lot of up tempo, and you know what Lamont likes to do will be a little bit better fit for Jordan than what they had going on up there. So but he'll I know that Lamont will have a nice role for him, but they'll need a guy like Pringle in there to body up some of these big dudes as well.
What is the likelihood at this point in time that Pringle does come back to the Palmetto State to play basketball?
I feel pretty good about it right now, but again, you know, I don't think it's going to be one trip and shut it down. I think he's going to take a few, and there have been some. There are a lot of schools who are after a guy like him, and that's going to mean a lot of attention and obviously a lot of money being thrown in his direction. So we'll see how that plays out. But you know, I know the staff feels pretty good right now about where they are going into the visit.
Yeah, they think he wants to. I mean, NIL. Ed asked how important is it. It's important for everybody in the transfer portal. Especially in basketball, you're not. I mean, you're gonna get there's some bargains. Don't get me wrong, but most of the time, especially for an athletic big man like that, Mike, you watched Alabama this year. You watched Pringle. What do you think about him? He's not. It's not as on that team. I think it's hard for a big man to score a whole lot on that.
I was going to ask that same question. With the two different styles, like does he? In Mike's opinion, does he fit better with what Lamont Parrish and his staff bring, or does he fit better at Alabama?
I think he fits better at South Carolina because he's going to play a heck of a lot more, and I'm sure he's thinking about that too. Like, don't let the numbers fool you. I mean, some people might be looking at it and go, I don't get it. What's all the hype about? He averaged 7 points and 5 rebounds. Alabama was in the Final Four. They were loaded talent-wise. He is a guy, with all due respect to Todd Butler, that will immediately make an impact. SEC caliber, big, athletic, can shoot from outside. He is what just about everybody wants today in basketball. So, as John mentioned, South Carolina is not the only team aware of that, and he's going to get other offers. So what you're banking on is, A, South Carolina's success last year, B, Lamont Parrish, his ability to be very, let's just say, he's beloved by, I think, this generation. And C, money, because money is going to be a major factor, and if not the biggest factor, in all of this. So I'm sure behind the scenes, all of that is going on. And I would just say that that would be a huge pickup. It would offensively, defensively, everything they want to do. He can play up tempo. He can play half court. He's a factor around the rim, but he's athletic enough to not just be a true plotter in the paint. So yeah, that would be. I've seen both of them in person, Pringle and Butler. Pringle for a couple of years now at Bama, but that would be a major pickup for a team that needs to replace, you know, a guy like Mack, who was so valuable last year. But compared to Mack, I mean, Mack was able to do a lot with dumping 5 inches off the ground. Pringle is a jumping jack. I mean, Pringle is a next level athlete that right away put in indelible ink. He'd be in the starting lineup and would certainly be a factor, major factor.
100%, 100%, and you know they will put the same priority on Nick Pringle as they put on BJ Mack last year. Like, they'll that's that, I mean, that's the guy. That would be the centerpiece of South Carolina's, you know, portal recruiting class this offseason would be Nick Pringle. He's A1 right there.
Yeah, you could see just looking at the stat line how he improved as the year went along too. If you go back to the Tennessee game on Saturday, March the 2nd, where he had 13 points and 9 boards. Well, even prior to that, honestly, if you could go back to the Florida game on February 21st, but he had a nice run here offensively, 13, 11, 10, 13, 11, 10, 12, and then 5, 6, 2, 16 against Clemson with the boards, you know, 9, 5, 10, 10, 9, 9, 11, 11. I mean, he really seemed to not only did Alabama find some confidence in him, but it looks like he kind of found some confidence in himself. And I, as you pointed out, Mike, he would play more at South Carolina. What is he? Can he shoot?
Yes, but he's not. I don't want to give people the wrong idea. He's not Mac shooting spot up threes. That's not his game.
Well, that's the Butler kid, right? Isn't that kind of where they're bringing him in?
Yeah, Again, Mac was a unicorn in that his size, his strength really was not around the rim. His strength was shooting open threes on pick and pops, and they worked that to perfection last season. Pringle, right off the bat, gives you better rim protection, better rebounding, just more of a force inside. Can he shoot? Yes, but he's not a guy that they're going to set up pick and pops for like they did with Mac. He's a different kind of athlete with a different kind of skill set. But if you're talking about a guy that started 16 games last year on a Final Four team, he averaged 18 minutes a game on a Final Four team and did so, you know, coming up big in big moments. He's the kind of guy that most SEC teams that are playing in March are working with, which, again, amplifies the job that Lamont did last year. They didn't have a player like that. You know, they just didn't have a true big, and I'm keeping Murray Boyles in a different category, a true big that's around 6'9", 6'10", 6'11", that, you know, I'm using a baseball term now, John, you'll like this, plus athleticism, you know, 80 of athleticism, and a guy that can battle with other bigs. Carolina really was playing behind the eight ball. I mean, that, and again, that was exposed like, in the Oregon game. Like, you just didn't have that type of athlete to go down low with the big kid from Nigeria. With a guy like Nick Pringle, I mean, like, this is what Tennessee has. This is what Arkansas has. This is what Kentucky has. This is what all these other programs that are playing for high stakes typically have on an SEC roster, and Carolina's been playing without.
That's a great point. It's a great point. Real quick note here. I saw this on Twitter this morning, and I did not catch this last week when the NCAA released the legislation news. All transfers in college basketball have to be in the portal by May. That includes grad transfers. Remember, grad transfers used to just be able to graduate and dip in if that's what they wanted to do. So as the portal turns, you've got 1 week to get in there, or you're staying where you're at. So we'll kind of see if that affects anything for the Gamecocks, and of course anybody else. But that is some interesting news. John, before we let you get out of here, Chloe Kitts and Colin Murray Boyles are the hottest couple at Carolina since who?
I don't know. I don't really keep track of that a whole lot. Let's see.
I don't know, man. That's a hard question. Who are the historical power couples at Carolina?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of any power couples. How about this one? How about this one? How about PGA Tour golfer Matt Neesmith and his SEC. I think she won something in the SEC. Abigail Pate, equestrian rider over there for Boo Major and the equestrian team. We can go with that one. That one's pretty good.
That's a good one. I was gonna throw out Ryan and Liz Brewer.
Okay, football. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Good time to get a fence built by Ryan Brewer, ryanbrewer.net. Yeah, I don't know. Cisco dated Adele, and they're married, of course. She was the center fielder on the softball team. He was Friday night guy.
Do you guys remember Bryce Sheldon, basketball player?
Yeah.
Yeah.
California kid. When we had the basketball banquet at the end of the year, Bryce Sheldon walked in with, I don't know who this girl was. I don't know what she did. But I'm telling you, she wasn't a 10. She was a 15. And, I mean, all anybody could do at all of the tables in the banquet hall was look over at the table and go, really, Bryce? Really? baseball players, historically, I mean, I could go down from Nate Janowitz on of guys who outkicked their coverage by a country mile. If you're a baseball player, like, let's be honest, you could be butt ugly and you're still racking up 10s.
Ooh,
you could be hitting 211 at the plate and you're still racking up 10s on campus. But Bryce Sheldon, I thought I'd seen it all, but goodness, I don't know. he got her out of California. I don't know what. But yeah, oh, Ryan Stack. Yes, don't forget Ryan Stack dated a Playboy model. And I know Ryan well. I still kid him about this. He wound up marrying another lovely woman, and he's a great family man living in Tennessee now, back in his home state. But yeah, that was the talk of town. She was a Gamecock cheerleader, I believe, who was in Playboy. And yeah,
I'll interesting. Leave it at that. Well, there's another power couple on campus right now, but they just. I don't think they showed up together. Hopefully they're still together. I don't think they showed up together at the Gamecock Gala. Ethan Petrie and John, what's his girlfriend's name? She runs track.
Grace. She's no longer on the track team. They're still together, but no longer competing. So she was not invited to the gala. Ethan had to walk in with Carson Hornig instead, who is not quite as ravished.
Not even close. Because she is a beautiful gal. We mentioned that to Ethan when we met her. She's you talk about Mike said outkick the coverage. He outpunted the entire ballpark. His entire ballpark. He's well done, Ethan. Well done. All right. Shane and Emily Beamer. Well, they weren't athletes at South Carolina. So, you know. Bird, we're just gonna delete his ass out. I'm so done with this guy. Get rid of him, Phil. just get rid of him. That's just stupid. We're having fun, Bird, but you're out of here. We're done with you. So, John, we're never done with you. You're always welcome back, no matter what. Thanks for all that you do. I'm sure that the Big Spur is going to be full of good stuff this week, and we'll see you next week.
Somebody mentioned Lauren Hill in here. Remember, well, I know one of my friends is, I think, married to her sister. He works out in L.A., screenwriter. I don't want to say his name, just in case he doesn't want to say his name. I think there's some family connection there.
Craig, yeah, the scheme's done. We mentioned that yesterday. That's a national brand.
That's a national power couple.
Yeah. You can tell I'm a big GQ guy. Read all
that smells all. Like jambalaya to me, like Skeens and Dunn. I bet it smells like average jambalaya. Sounds like
a country group.
John, you're welcome to leave at any time.
Yes. Appreciate you guys.
Goodbye, John.
We got to have somebody on here to give us the air of legitimacy.
Rebuild JC Horn. There you go.
Y'all enjoy the 12 o'clock hour. I appreciate y'all having me on for the 11.
Hey, John, you did a phenomenal job running the tournament, man. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank y'all for coming out, and we'll see you, Mr. Third Place.
You're the best. Yeah, yeah. Pat didn't like that, by the way. Pat ruffled the feathers of the big man.
That got a little awkward. It's like the guy that stays too long at a party.
Yeah. Okay, man. It's past midnight.
I got to go, fellas. It's been real, but you know, once you start devolving into power couples,
I'm distracted today.
I'm gone.
When's this drive around the SEC? I'm looking forward to that.
We did one yesterday.
I feel naked. I feel like I'm on the show butt naked today because I didn't do JC and Morgan this morning, but there was a JC and Morgan that took place, and that's weird.
Hey,
so there's no JC5, you know?
Yeah, I got to say, Hey, Phil made his Mad Dog made his JC and Morgan debut, not producing. He always does a great job with that. We put him on. We gave him a Mad Dog 5 on screen. And he went like next level Mad Dog 5. It really like thought provoking questions. I was like, whoa.
Oh, yeah. I probably should have him do the JC 5.
No. No, I'm not getting rid of the JC 5. You were missed. But Jeff Dantzler, who does a great job covering Georgia, sat in and we covered a lot. It was good stuff. But I just wanted to give special props to the Mad Dog. So doing double duty today.
Mad Dog's mustache working overtime.
Oh, wait. Yeah, and I got a meme generator that I downloaded over the weekend. You guys have gotten memes from me, like little GIFs, cartoons.
Love the memes.
And I made one for Mad Dog that I actually made that one public. I can't – there's one I made with me and Mike, but it has like – some bad language in it.
Can we get rid of the music on that?
Yeah, I can't.
Clean that up.
About male anatomy. About
those and stuff, little Kingstons in the background. That's what gets me about all of them. Throw a little Kingston in the background.
In the background of all of them. Like he's like observing or he's in the audience. On Mad Dog's mic is Tony Schiavone from wrestling. I put your head on Tony Schiavone's body.
Tony used to do play-by-play for the Gwinnett Braves.
Wow.
And I Brian Jordan right and I would do some of those on TV, and everybody would be like, Mike, do you know who that is? That's Tony Schiavone. And I grew up with wrestling with Mean Gene Okerlund on WWF. I didn't put two and two together. That was Tony Schiavone of the old Southern wrestling that you'd see on TBS with Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair. I didn't know, like, he was a huge deal.
Yeah.
I just thought he was some random. He didn't talk much. He was very antisocial. Now he's back on wrestling. But, yeah, Tony. And he still, I believe, is the engineer for Georgia football. And no, he gave that up. But he used to be for Georgia football and basketball. But Tony Schiavone is like a – if you followed Southern wrestling back in the day as a kid, he was a rock star.
Yeah.
Absolute rock star.
We are out of time. Hour one is in the books. Our coverage of Carolina baseball presented by Resto Pros of the Midlands, RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Anthem up next.
Down here in the South, we don't always see eye to eye. While our taste in college football teams or what sauce, if any, goes best on a rack of ribs or what to mix with our Dixie vodka might be up for debate, we can all agree there's nothing better than a Southern tailgate. And like our favorite college teams, our ingredients come from small towns and big cities. They're grown in Southern soil, are crafted by Southern hands, and proudly represent the South in our backyard and beyond. So raise a glass of Dixie Southern Vodka to celebrate being made in America and raised in the South.
The season rolls on at Love Chevy, where the inventory is overflowing and the deals are in full bloom. Rev up your season with Love's exclusive specials on Suburbans, Tahoes, Silverados, Trailblazers, and the ever-popular Chevy Trax. They're hard to find. At Love Chevy, get behind the wheel and feel the possibilities. New adventures, new destinations, just you and the open road. Act now for Springtacular Savings at Love Chevrolet. The best selection of new Chevys. The lowest price, guaranteed. The other dealers upsell, overcharge, and will say most anything to get the sale. At Love Chevy, satisfied customers say it all. Things like helpful, knowledgeable, honest, and fun. Your trusted hometown Chevy dealer since 1961. I-26 at Harbison and at lovechevy.com. Together, let's drive.
That's the power.
Hey Gamecock fans, this is Roman Kimball with South Carolina Baseball. My friends over at Electric Bikes of Charleston have the largest selection of e-bikes in South Carolina. You can cruise up to high speeds of 28 miles per hour, which is about 70 miles an hour slower than my fastball. Stay in shape and enjoy your life with an electric bike from Electric Bikes of Charleston, where buyers come from all across South Carolina. Visit electricbikescharleston.com. See you at the ballpark and go Gamecocks.
Hey Gamecock Nation, my name is Kyle, longtime listener of the show and avid golfer. I wanted to take my game to the next level, but let's face it, golf is a hard game to learn on your own. I heard the ad from McKellar Enterprises and reached out to the owner and former Gamecock golfer, Meredith Taylor. In just 2 months of working with Meredith, I shot my lowest round ever, and I've never felt more confident in my golf game. So if you're looking to take your game to the next level, go to McKellarEnterprises.org and book your lesson today with former Gamecock golfer, Meredith Taylor. Go Gamecock.